You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
So the second parliamentary reading on the bill for abortion reform on Tuesday night included voting on David Seymour's amendment. Seymour took issue with a proposal within the bill that would have ensured abortion clinics provide 150-metre safe zones for people who undergo procedures to protect them from harassment. Seymour said that those kind of safe zones would impede the free speech of people doing the harassment. The vote on Seymour's amendment was split into two parts. The first vote was on removing definitions of safe zones from the bill, and the second was to remove the legal provisions for safe zones from the bill. But the second vote was completed as a vocal vote, and not all MPs seemed to know that on Tuesday, and so there was some hold in terms of, well, vocal engagement, and so Seymour's amendment passed. This week I asked Andrew Little what a vocal vote actually is so that I could try to get clarification on how confusion can pervade within Parliament and jeopardise reform.
So when, particularly in conscience votes like this, and at the committee stage of the House, you go through clause by clause and bit by bit the legislation. Any MP can put up an amendment, and that's what happened. And sometimes MPs will put up an amendment that covers different parts of the bill. So in this case, David Seymour had put up an amendment that covered, that required a couple of changes in the bill. We voted on one part, and that was voted down by a very narrow margin, 3 votes. I think what happened, everybody thought that that had dealt with all of the changes that he had put up. And then as we were going through the various other amendments from other MPs, that one came up again, but it was the part of his amendment that changed a different part of the bill. A voice vote was called, because that's the first thing the person in the chair does. There was a very loud yes in favour of, you know, the withdrawing the safe zones. There was a very meek sort of no vote. And then the chair waits to see whether anybody calls for a personal vote. Nobody called for a personal vote. I'm the minister in the chair. I can't, so I'm reliant on others in the House to do it. But nobody called for it. And then Anne Tolley, who was in the chair, did what she's required to do and said, well, that's a vote in favour, so it meant that that the safe zones were removed from the bill. So I think, like, it was late at night. I think people were distracted. People were a little bit confused about what was happening, because they thought they'd already voted on it. And anyway, the opportunity was missed, and then sadly that went. Now, since then, of course, we've all reflected on what could we do about it. Because the first change that David Seymour put out was lost by 3 votes and 5 MPs didn't vote, there's a question about, do you kind of try to run the numbers again? There's no guarantee that it will be successful. So certainly the judgment I've made is, unless I can see that there are numbers to support it, then I won't be seeking any further change at this point.
But why is it possible for there to be confusion about 2 parts of the vote anyway? What went wrong in that being raised in Parliament in a way that wasn't thoroughly clear?
So when you get a list of all the changes, so to get it right down to precise detail, he had what's called a supplementary order paper, which is just another fancy name for amendment. And it was amendment number 464. So it changed clause 5 of the bill. That was one part. And it also changed a series of clauses starting at clause 15. Early in when we were voting on it, we dealt with the change to clause 5. And that was declared as SOP 464, having been voted down. So I think a lot of people thought, well, the whole amendment had been voted down, not just the Clause 5 part, whereas in fact only the Clause 5 part had been voted down. Then, an hour or so later, the other changes to Clauses 15, 16 and 17 came up for the vote, and everybody was, well, what I observed is people fussing around looking, oh, I thought we'd voted on this. The verbal vote took place. No one called for the personal vote, which is when everybody goes to the lobbies and ticks their name off. And therefore, the chair called it on the basis of the voice vote, which, and having been sitting next to the chair myself, the yes vote was very, very loud and the no vote was very, very soft. So the chair did what she thought was the right thing.
Okay. Radio New Zealand broke the story as MPs seemed unprepared for the second vote. Do you think that is why the addition of safe zones is no longer possible? What's sort of your response to that criticism?
Yeah, I think there was confusion about whether or not the House had actually already voted on the whole of David Seymour's proposed changes. And then, or even though there was a hiatus, there was a gap there, and an opportunity to call for a personal vote, nobody called for it. I can't explain that. I don't know why someone didn't call. I was sort of glaring at various people and expecting that a call would be made. But whether people were just tired, confused, not concentrating, whatever, no call was made, and that was the result.
Okay, I understand. You have said that you would have liked to have been there, but there is still the rest of the bill to get through and get to the third reading, and it's looking reasonably positive. Some people see prohibiting intimidating behaviour and interference as key in reforming abortion. What makes you remain hopeful that this reform can still happen in a way that helps people who are getting abortions to not feel shame?
I think the fact that we take it out of the Crimes Act, and the fact that, I mean, what that will mean is, and it'll be a woman considering or seeking an abortion will just have to go to her chosen medical practitioner, health practitioner, and it'll be a decision she takes with the benefit of their advice. She won't have to go getting second opinions and in some cases third opinions, won't have to go to multiple clinics. It'll just be a consultation between her and her health practitioner. The earlier women can get an abortion, then they qualify for early medical abortion, so taking a couple of pills. That means it's more readily accessible in a lot more places than it is at the moment. So all of those things will make a huge difference.
Right.
And will help. So you've got to remember too about safe zones. We don't have safe zones at the moment, and the part in the bill that was voted down, it wouldn't have created safe zones. It would have allowed the minister, on application by a DHB or an abortion clinic who thought they needed one, to consider whether one was needed and to put one in place on a temporary basis. So it is a good thing to have on our statute book. I'm disappointed that it hasn't made it there. But when I look at the rest of the reform package, and when I look at the attack that it came under, you know, all sorts of changes being put up, and including from Labor members as well, ones that on the face of it looked reasonable but actually would have just sort of taken us backwards. Actually, the House consistently voted to have the kind of reform package that we put up originally. That's all intact. I'm really pleased about that.
Yeah.
And it gives me confidence that when we come to the third reading in the next couple of weeks, actually it'll all still be there.
Yeah. Well, good luck for that part of the third reading. I hope that it stays intact. I would like to finish with at least a little bit of a conversation about sort of your response to David Seymour pushing the removal of safe zones for the prioritisation of free speech.
Well, he comes from a libertarian kind of political party. That's what they stand for. And good on him for standing for that. You do, of course, freedom of speech needs its champions. But freedom of speech isn't an absolute, and it is possible that there are some people who think they're exercising their freedom of speech, but are actually causing harm to others, and particularly when it comes to intimidating and harassing. And I have the view that, in this particular case, a woman seeking medical assistance or going to seek an abortion and going to a place where she can do that should not have to be harassed and intimidated and or photographed and images used in a way that's totally beyond her control. That's not freedom of speech in my view.
Yeah.
That is harassment. Now he says, but we have laws to deal with that. Yeah, well you do after the harm has been caused, and the purpose of safe zones is to be a preventive measure so women don't have to suffer that in the first place. They've got enough on their plate with their own health issues and the difficult decision of considering an abortion than to have, frankly, a bunch of nutters wandering around taking photos, shoving leaflets in their face, making them feel bad for what is a totally legitimate health decision for that woman. And I don't think that is a legitimate expression of freedom of speech in the next few weeks too. It's going to sharpen up because we'll announce our proposals about kind of hate speech things. And we're going to have to be prepared for that. I'm very clear freedom of speech is not an absolute, and it is possible for people exercising their freedom of speech to cause harm to others. And look, it's a thing, you know, people can say things that cause offence, I get that, and I'm not fussed about that, but when people set out to cause harm, to minimise, to marginalise, to demean, to kind of give a sense that other people are not entitled to be who they are or be where they are, then actually you're entitled to call that out and say, that's not a legitimate exercise of freedom of speech. That's, you know, dominant culture's bullying and intimidating, and we shouldn't tolerate that.
That was Labour MP Andrew Little. The Wire. That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.